welcome back to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin, the host, coming to you from Coins Plus from the Clock Tower Division Hill Plaza. I'm in the Clock Tower recording studio, 3201 North Division Street. This is where we where Coins Plus is located. Coins Plus is the sponsor of the show. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. As I've said, been in business over 20 years now. Started in 96. This is our 21st fiscal business year. That's a few. I never imagined it'd quite come to this, but praise God. And Coins Plus is always actively involved in the purchase and sale of all forms of rare coins and precious metals, scrap gold, jewelry, diamonds. We do wholesale diamonds to the public. We offer diamonds in our portfolios. When we do portfolios, we use what are called GIA certified diamonds. GIA is the most respected diamond grader in the world. You have a certificate, a map of the diamond that shows every inclusion. It shows every millimeter of every cut, every facet. It's like a fingerprint, and it makes the diamond immediately liquid anywhere in the world at any time. And diamonds are incredibly liquid, hard assets when handled properly and dealt with properly. There is a bandwidth of quality that is liquid, and once you get outside of that bandwidth, it's not quite as liquid. But in a lot of cases, people like to get outside of that bandwidth when they're doing diamonds for jewelry and stuff, because sometimes people want bang for the buck. They'll come in and they say, I want the biggest stone possible for the money, rather than saying, I want the highest quality stone I can get. The higher the quality, the smaller the stone gets for the same price. And it's not bad to have stones that are off quality. I personally wear them, and my wife does, and because they're nice looking. And a lot of people don't know if a stone's internally flawless or D-color, which is pure white. People just don't know that. But when it comes to investing, those are the stones that you want, because they're desired everywhere. And diamonds are an interesting thing. They're very compact. They're extremely valuable. You can carry them with you wherever you go. Obviously, they're not detectable by metal detectors. They're not detectable by a lot of things. And it's pretty interesting now how they have these weird scanners when you go through the airports. They're wrong a lot. I mean, I've did some traveling lately, and I mean, I saw this 86-year-old guy, just go through the ringer. They're just convinced that, he's got something in his shirt and his pants, and he doesn't. And I guess hypothetically they're oversensitive. It's kind of interesting the level of civil abuse that we are willing to take just in the name of supposed safety. I'm sure we all know the quote from Ben Franklin that says, anyone who's willing to give up liberty in the name of safety deserves neither safety nor liberty. Folks, the fear of loss of safety is the number one deceptive practice in order to strip away liberty. Terrorism is ideal. The book 1984 it's not the Bible, it's not inspired, but what it is it's a blueprint for the future that was commissioned by the Fabian Society. The Fabian Society was a society, or is, that believes that the elite should rule and reign. It basically wanted to continue on kingships and elitist leadership, and they wrote that, and Aldous Huxley's A Brave New World. These are not books that I would recommend per se. They're interesting reads, but you're not going to get any deep spiritual insight. 1984, a little bit more, but there's so much going on in our world today that was prophesied in that book. I am baffled. I was forced to read that book, and guess what, in 1984 when I was in school. And so much of what was in that book still had not occurred. And we were just like, yeah, well, kind of, sort of. But now it has. It's just everything from cameras everywhere and heat sensors and, you know, big screen TVs and everything. And, you know, their ability to track you through a device. I don't, you know, there was so much prophesied in that book. And they had what's called Newspeak. And this last week, I was watching as these college students screamed down a speaker. They were shouting down speakers. A speaker at a college who'd written some, you know, some novels and whatever. He had his opinion. And it reminded me first, it was so overbearing and it was so intimidating and so overwhelming. The speaker had to flee, and there was a professor who was escorting him, and she was assaulted to the point where she had to go to the hospital. You know, and the author's name was Charles Murray, and I don't know much about him. He's a libertarian author, and he was shouted down at a Middlebury college, whatever that is. They sat there and screamed, you know, "Charles Murray, go away, anti," I don't even remember what it was. It was basically sexist, racist, anti-gay. You know, just sick. I mean, what is wrong with these people? I mean, really, why are these college students being taught to do this? Now, guess what happens? They try to tip over the guy's car. They assault the professor to the point of she's in the hospital. And guess what punishment was brought on the college students? If you guess none, you're right. And then later on in the debates on the news channels, I'm listening to this garbage where they're saying, these children, they say, these students, have a right to freedom of speech. So what they did was okay. That is not freedom of speech. There is no way in you know what that our founding fathers intended that to mean freedom of speech. Freedom of speech means a dialogue. You have a right to say what you have. I have a right to say what I have. Shouting down, shouting over you is not right. And to be honest with you, when these colleges are encouraging this crap because of their liberal mindset, they are creating monsters. And so first, this reminded me of the Jews at the time of Christ. There was no dialogue. There was accusations. You know what? The Bible says the devil is the accuser, right? And then we go into the Saul Alinsky Rules for Radicals, folks. That book is such a critical component to what's happening in America. When I see these things happening, I am getting sick for this nation. I'm getting sick. When dialogue stops, when the children, technically, of our universities are the ones that are doing the dirty work of the government, demanding government involvement in everything, demanding, you know, basically the equivalent of fascism, and then calling other people fascists, we have hit full throttle. We are in trouble. When these girls show up at these speeches and they say, you didn't mention this, you didn't mention all the oppression to women in the history of America, and you didn't mention the inequality of women, and you didn't mention this and that, does that mean that you aren't for women's rights? You know, the truth is, folks, only 7% of American women consider themselves feminists. They're flocking from it. And the reason is simple. It's feminism is not about equality. Feminism is about hating and destroying men. The real problem is with most of these feminists, they are young, virile women that have yet to find their guy. They've yet to find their groove in life. They just haven't gotten there yet. And the problem is that you know, these women are going to grow up, they're going to fall in love, they're going to get married, they're going to have kids, and they're going to stop preaching this stuff. It's a radical, idealistic theory that just, it's very much like the 60s rebellion. It just doesn't make sense. And so it's just a destructive method, and there's a group of people that want to destroy. It's the liberals. It really is. They want this division. They want this dissension. They thrive on sects, S-E-C-T-S, not the other. They thrive on division and factions, I should say. They want us broken apart. The Republicans, folks, seriously, I really believe they want unity. I really do. I think the problem is, part of watching politics, I think, is age and wisdom. You get these young kids that have Obama as their president, and they've been fed this bowl of lies, and they think, you know, all this, that the world's such a beautiful place, and then you get Trump, and they freak out, and they go, oh, no, we're going to burn. I remember when Bush, well, you know, just the transition of what we've been through in this nation in my lifetime, I remember being consciously aware enough, old enough to understand Reagan, and he was a uniter, and he had some grace, and then there was Bush Sr., who was a graceful man. I mean, New World Order and all that, we know about all that. Then we go to Clinton, who the introducer of radical immorality, the absolute infuser of severe radical immorality, just starts the destructive process upon our nation, doing the undoable. Things that just had not been done. You go back and you look at Nixon and his impeachment. He was impeached and he walked. Clinton was impeached really for far worse. I mean, yeah, Nixon was spying and they had the, you know, Watergate and all the screw tape, whatever they were. And, you know, sure, it was bad. It was dumb. And, you know, and it was, but it was understandable a little bit. You get to Clinton, and you add in a serious case of sexual immorality, and that, you know, just infallibility. What's crazy about our system that we've been taught is that when men refuse to play by the rules, there's a ton of leeway there, because politicians are afraid of not being reelected. And that, folks, is a terribly frightful, frightful thing. Let's face it. When they won't stand up, they won't do what's right. They're told what to think and what to do. Chuck Schumer has the Democrats in such crazy lockstep. The Republicans, you know, for better or worse, are far more independent. They're kind of all over the place. You get the crazies like John McCain and Lindsey Graham. I mean, these guys are nuts. They are destroyers. They are, as they say, rhinos, Republicans in name only. When you think of the name Republican, two things come to mind. One is, you know, contemporary bureaucracy, sold out party, politics as usual. But then the other thing that comes to mind in my mind is Republic. I mean, the Republicans, who've been around a long time, they believe in the Republic. They believe in the rule of law. Democrats believe in democracy. Whatever you think is cool at the time goes. Well, guess what, folks? People are wrong. I mean, and even in mass, people make decisions as groups that they would never make as individuals. People behave as groups as they'd never behave as individuals. Look at riots. I mean, seriously, you know, we've got rioting going on now. I watched this weekend at these universities. These riots are breaking out, and we're getting these liberal judges and liberal professors and cops or whatever it is. They're allowing this stuff to go on where they're doing hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of damage. And they don't even know. Do you really think these people know anything about politics? Seriously? They don't even know what they're doing out there. They really don't. So this author gets shouted down, pushed out, and the university does nothing. And then that night on the news, you've got all these liberals saying, well, these kids have a right to freedom of speech. And then I see news anchors saying, well, what about the speaker? And this Richard Powell or whatever, this black guy with glasses that I personally am not a fan of, to put it lightly, I can't stand the guy. He says, well, he doesn't have a right to be heard, he says, because, quote, what he's saying is stupid. These are adults. They literally believe this garbage. They literally believe it. I have freedom of speech because I agree with what I say, because what I say is rational. I'm right. You're wrong. You don't have a right to freedom of speech because what you're saying is stupid. That this is their logic. This is their common sense. I mean, common sense is not, sorry I used that word in the same paragraph as liberal. There just is no common sense. But the problem is, do they see the potential destruction to this nation? The effect of this stuff scares the tar out of me, to be honest with you. This is, and then Trump, I mean, let's be honest. Some of the stuff he does, he comes out and blurts out about Obama wiretapping him, and then he's got the FBI director saying he's wrong, and he is the president of the United States, and he's got to figure it out. I mean, he's got every authority imaginable, and he's got to learn to shut his mouth. I mean, candidly, as he ran for president, his mouth alarmed me. He got the nomination. I supported him because he was a lot better than Hillary, and he just doesn't seem to be able to shut his mouth. He's lost so much credibility as the president of the United States of America. People say, well, he's a businessman. Folks, wisdom is wisdom. Wisdom is universal. It does not matter what the plaque on your desk says your job is. Wisdom is wisdom. And I read Proverbs every day. I pray to God for wisdom. It's important to me. You know, the book of Solomon or the book of Proverbs was Solomon trying to warn his son Rehoboam before he ended up destroying the kingdom. And then at the end of Ecclesiastes, he basically says, the writing and reading of books is a wearisome. He's like, there's so much out there, you'll never, ever get it. He's like, give it up. Read the Bible. Love your family. Love God. Work hard. Do a good job. Life is simple. He had so much wisdom. He was so overwhelmed with so much knowledge and analysis. He shed it all. He just said, you know what? It's all vanity. Give it all up. Just live right. He's like, the concept of all the wisdom in the world. It's kind of like people think when you mix all the colors of the spectrum, you get black. But you don't. When you mix all the colors of the spectrum, you get white. And when you put all the wisdom together, God's wisdom, you know what it says? It says, don't take this wrong, but it says, you don't matter, quit. It's like, stop all your rubbish. Stop all your self-centered, self-focused, whiny, complaining. Stop causing problems where you don't need to. Just do it. It's like, just buckle down and do the right thing. Be the best person you can do. Be, get out there and make the most of yourself. There's a young man I've kind of known for many, many years, and I've got this weird relationship with him. My heart aches for the kid because he is so loaded with talent, just so loaded. I mean, athletic, intelligence, people skills, looks, just got it. And, he worked here for a number of years, and it was as he was kind of, it was always passing through and everything's temporary. And he just is so loaded. And then he ends up, he'll work a while, go to seminary. He wants to be a missionary. Some reason he thinks he has to go to seminary. But the thing is I know I spend so much time on my knees, and God's shown me so much about how he's made each one of us and buried a destiny within us. And some, you know, people have destinies. Every one of you has a package of talents, has a series of talents. The Bible's crystal clear about this. Some of you are meant to be engineers. Actually, some of you are really meant to be a janitor. Some are meant to drive a garbage truck. You're good at it. It's where you belong. It's where you fit. It's where you feel right. Some of you a mechanic. You know, some people want to spend their life on the water. Some belong in business. Business can combine competitiveness and drive and motivation and a sense of accomplishment and success. And, you know, a successful business person can then use what God gives him, the prophets. He can use that to better people's lives. Somebody's got to pay for the missionary. Somebody's got to pay for the church. Somebody's got to reach out and help the homeless. Somebody's got to help young kids that are struggling. This is where God blesses you financially. Everyone's got a series of talents, and it's so hard to watch this kid struggle through this. I don't know who's planted what in their mind, but it really aches to me because I'm like, you know, I've been around him. He's just not, things aren't clicking. The momentum's not going. I don't know what he's doing, but it's like, folks, we've got to just stop all of the convolution, all of the confusion, and just go for it. We don't owe an explanation to another man. We owe it to God. And we've got to look truth in the eye and say, God, who did you make me to be? And that I will do. We can twist and turn and justify. You know, when it comes to alcoholism, severe addiction, they've got four words that come up as part of the addiction, part of the disease. They say that the addict will deny, justify, rationalize, and minimize. Or, you know, you can put them in any order you want. Rationalize, minimize, justify, and deny. And we as humans, we do this. We start to rationalize and justify ourselves. And, you know, when you seek God, as we've talked about in Psalms, where David is called a man after God's own heart, the reason why is those four words do not exist in his life. Rationalize, justify, minimize, deny. He does none of those. He doesn't rationalize. He accepts the narrative. He accepts God's truth straight on. Minimize. No, if anything, David maximizes the relevance of things. Justify, you know, I did it because. No, I don't see David doing that. I see him just looking straight at the facts. I sinned. It was wrong. Period. Not because of this and because of that. Look at what David went through with Saul's pursuit of him, and he tried to be respectful. He tried. I mean, that, you know, when you even go to the next component where you look at the Ten Commandments and what has happened in our society with the Ten Commandments, and you think about, you know, honor your father and your mother that you may live a long, healthy, happy life, or however it's written. You know, that respect that David showed for his royalty father, or whatever Saul could be called, is so respectful. It's like, and you know, you see these kids now, the millennial generation's tough. You see these kids that have this wholesale rejection of their parents. Their parents are just these rotten people that did all these things wrong, and they literally are processing this trash in their head. And granted, I'm sure, you know, don't get me wrong, I know there's the bad ones out there, but there's a lot of them that are just parents. And they're undergoing all this stuff, and it ties back to what I was saying about the thought process of the freedom of speech in the colleges. Freedom of speech, you know, doesn't work if you have no respect, no dignity, no character. America's system does not work without Judeo-Christian roots. That's why such an attempt is made by the Obamas of the world. Bring the Muslims in. They will shred your system. They will tear it apart. The Ten Commandments, I mean, those are Judeo-Christian precepts at their finest. Granted, you can branch them out. They become more. We know all about this. You know, we can get real hypothetical that everything kind of stems back to it. But if we really take a look at what's happened in this nation and our attitude and approach to the Ten Commandments, I mean, it's sad. I mean, I think you'd agree. It is sad as sad gets. You can't, you know, you go down the list of them. I am the Lord your God. Okay, well, do we, how are we doing as a nation and an individual in the area of idolatry? I was told recently 38 million kids watched the video game championships. These video games, 8 hours a day are spent by our youth on electronics. How are we, I guess I'm kind of jumping ahead where he says, no graven images or likeness, you know, have no other gods before me. You know, how are we doing for this? Not too well, I don't think. I mean, if anything, our society is about, our society is completely about other gods, graven images. You know, I'm the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt. You shall have no other gods before me. Well, we have nothing but other gods before him. You know, you shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the waters. I'm reading out of Exodus. You shall not bow down to them or worship them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generations and of those who hate me, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love and keep my commandments. Now think about that. First of all, if somebody came, I always think of aliens. I'm not saying they exist or don't, but I'm just saying if someone observed observed families in America and they had to report back, what would they say? They'd say, well, they worship this box or these big flat screens in their rooms and they stare at them all day. And these things tell them what to eat, what to drink, how to feel, what to think. That's a graven image. Electronics are, they walk around with these little screens in their hand all day, you know. They stare at a screen at work all day. These are graven images. You know, there's, I mean, granted, God gave us a lot to enjoy on this earth. There's all kinds of things that we can do and enjoy. But look at what he made us. He made, you know, wonderful beauty outdoors, incredible, you know, nature, and there's just a lot. And his word, we need his word. Man does not live by bread alone. We need every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. You shall not use the name of the Lord your God in vain. You know, that one I don't even think I have to say. That's a no-brainer. That's completely accepted on TV now. Completely. You know, remember the Sabbath day. How are we doing there? I'm not so sure what that even means sometimes to people, you know. I mean, it was a day of rest. And then, of course, Sabbath was Saturday. And people ask me if I'm Seventh-day. No, but I know what the Bible says. Sabbath means Saturday. And then it was changed by the Catholics due to Judaizing and all that. So that's a question you have to work out among yourself. Then Paul goes and says, whatever you call the Sabbath, keep it holy. You know, so how are we for honoring the Sabbath, really? You know, and how many of our churches are on the money? Churches are all over the board now. I've gone to a few, and I'm telling you, they're all over the board in their beliefs, just all over the place. And, you know, I was just speaking with someone this weekend about, she was talking about Calvinism and how it's, you know, she's trying to find a church that isn't so bent on Calvinism. Well, to me, that's pretty sad that somebody has to worry that Calvinism has infiltrated a church so bad that that's the most important thing to the church. I went to a church and had a friend like that for a while. I mean, it's, you know, the truth of it is, right or wrong, Calvinism, Arminianism, it doesn't matter. What matters is the Apostles' Creed. You know, Calvinism is a form of Protestantism, and, you know, I don't know. I think there's spiritualism through Christ. I think it's crystal clear. of what, you know, God wants out of us. And that's, of course, just my opinion. I'm not saying Calvinists are wrong. I'm a very philosophical person. I love philosophy. I love to look into those things and analyze them. But I know that when the dust settles, all that truly matters is what we call the Apostles' Creed. Those are the basic, you know, precepts, the basics, doctrines, guidelines that we live by as believers. That anything outside of that is essentially excess or extra and not relevant. It's the Apostles' Creed is what, those are the foundational principles by which we need to live as believers. Anything outside of that, and like I said, it's like, you know, you believe in God, the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth. I'm sure you all know it. There's all in there, and then of course we've got different versions of it where they've added, you know, I believe in God the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, Jesus Christ, his only Son, our Lord, who was conceived by the Holy Spirit, born of the Virgin Mary, suffered under Pontius Pilate, crucified, dead, and buried. On the third day he rose from the dead, he ascended into heaven, and sits on the right hand of God the Father Almighty. And, you know, and then he shall come to judge the quick and the dead. I believe in the Holy. And then they get into the Holy Spirit, the Holy Catholic Church. And Catholic means united, one body. Communion of the saints, forgiveness of sins, resurrection of the body, and life everlasting. You know, that's really the bottom line that we need as a church. Those are the basic doctrines. And then people go tangentially into pre-trib rapture and Calvinism and all these things that, you know, they may fulfill you, they may give you, you know, they may explain something to you, great, but generally each person has to seek and find God. If we truly believe in the Holy Spirit, we allow people to walk their journey. If someone is a believer, you've got to let them walk their journey. If somebody chooses to be a leader in the church, they have a different set of standards. A parishioner can go home and have a couple beers. I personally don't believe a pastor should. It's not that I think having a little alcohol is bad, but he needs to not make sure he's not a stumbling block to anyone around him. If somebody has a problem with alcohol and they see the pastor drinking, they think it's okay to drink, and they, for them it may not be. You know, a parishioner can have a $100,000 car. But a pastor can't. And it's not, you know, it's not judgmentalism. It's just, you know, when you choose that path, you have to realize how people perceive things. I spent many years very poor. I feel blessed now. I have some nice things. And I have seen how people react and respond. I've seen people change over the years as we've gotten nicer homes and better cars. I've watched people's attitudes that are close to me change. I've watched people begin to expect things. And there's a really weird effect of money on people, and I cannot quite explain it to you other than to say it's very, very real. So there we go. Let's talk a little bit about, again, you're listening to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin, the host. True Wealth is sponsored by Coins Plus. Coins Plus is a full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. We buy all forms of rare coins, gold, silver, diamonds, scrap gold jewelry, etc. We deal in precious stones. I've got so many, I don't know what to do with them. I've got to get them organized. There's a story there, but we really, our main thrust is investment portfolios. We specialize in them. We help you succeed financially to build a hard asset-based investment. It's critical that you obey biblical precepts in this. God's been very clear about the value of gold. And from there, it's maybe hard for some to comprehend, but there are sectors developed of financial sectors of investment that, you know, retain the same value and behavior. I mentioned earlier, you know, the only things that are biblically attributed as true wealth is gold, silver, livestock, real estate, human life, and precious stones. Well, that doesn't mean that you have to have gold bullion, silver bullion, you know, a house, livestock, meaning sheep, and precious stones, gemstones. No, there's all kinds of related industries. There's jewelry. There's, you know, the coin industry. The coin industry is the entire financial sector that's precious metals based. You can have, as far as livestock goes, I mean, basically what that means is benefiting from, you know, food and all that. And even whether it comes out of the land or from animals or, you know, that kind of stuff. Real estate, there's a bunch of different ways you can make money on real estate. It could be oil. It could be as a farmer. It could be, you know, buying and selling real estate in and of itself. You could have a rental home. There's sectors that just seem to last biblically. And then, of course, precious stones. God mentions them as true wealth multiple times. You got to be very knowledgeable to enter that arena. And although there's ways to do it, there's guys that are pitching them all the time as investments. But you got to be so careful because you don't really know what you're doing unless you're dealing with the right person. There are con men. The precious stone industry seems to gather some loose cogs, we'll say. So where are we in this nation? We've got serious, for some reason, they've used Trump as a catalyst to lose their minds. I believe Obama's technically behind it. That may sound conspiratorial, but he never really encouraged people to accept Trump and let him be himself. Trump, on the other hand, he does lack wisdom in his speech. He says things he shouldn't. And as I expressed earlier in the show, it's a little bit frustrating. As I am doing more research on economic issues, one thing that, you know, Trump is an 80s guy. I mean, and by that I mean, you know, a Reaganite. And during Reagan era, things were a little bit different. Our morality and structure was a lot better. We hadn't hit the levels of hyper-regulation. I personally, my opinion is the way we fight the drug war is just incredibly destructive. It's a great deception where I don't know why they're just going bonkers right now on the opiate thing. I mean, they just are so overhyping it, and so many politicians are getting on board. You know, it's always something, isn't it? It's always something. They've got to have something to throw tons of money at. Now they got Big Pharma included, which is the big pharmaceutical companies. Anything to get billions and billions and billions of dollars. And it's scary. I mean, it really, folks, it's scary because have things really changed that much? The internet gives them the appearance of things being radical. You watch a blog, you see five idiots saying things that normally would be said on the phone behind closed doors, and it looks really bad. I remember reading on some blog about when I was researching this, some people in prison are allowed to blog, apparently, and you're reading about prisoners talking about how, you know, excited they are to crush up a pill and shoot it into their arm. I mean, that stuff makes you cringe. You're just like, yuck. But that stuff's on the web. And it's beginning to affect those that don't think like that's mindset. When you think about it in a big way and you think, okay, so one pill got into prison and the guys, is that really an epidemic? I don't think so. So the drug war, you know, I'm not doing the show on that, but I guarantee you, folks, we're pumping so many hundreds of billions of dollars a year into that thing, and we're not winning. And it's not because the drugs are just so out of control. It's because we're creating our own business. It's its own micro economy that feeds among itself. It's, you know, the revolving door of people going in and out of jail. And, you know, we've got the highest per capita incarceration rate for adult males in the world. One out of seven adult males have felonies. I mean, that's a problem. Does that mean one out of seven adult males are criminal threats to society? I don't think so. I think it's just a system that's a little bit harsh and a little bit impersonal. The law is the law, and judges believe that. Juries don't understand that they have the right to vote their conscience and reject laws based on constitutional grounds. We're starting to see more and more in courts where, you know, real law is not practiced. Everything is precedential law. Everything is based on prior rulings. So if a judge makes a mistake and there's this continuous migration towards hardcore socialism, that's the way the courts begin to rule more and more. That's what we're seeing out of a lot of these Ninth District Court rulings, especially against, like, you know, Trump's supposed travel ban or whatever they want to call it. Trump's a little bit of a loose cannon. I'll give him that. I mean, he's got a lot of potential. We just, you know, he's getting a lot done, but some of the things he does are overshadowing it. So essentially, when I'm looking at economic flaws that are too big not to fail, remember in 2008, too big to fail was the term. Banks that were too big to fail in 2008 are now so much bigger than they were. So while banks may be a little more solvent right now, a little more liquid and not strapped so bad, if economic failure comes, the risk to our overall economy is far worse than 08, 09. And the problem is, if you follow this cycle, we've had 21, you know, Fed-backed congressional bailouts. It's by design. It's not an accident. The amount of currency that was pumped out under Obama just shows his ignorance. It's a combination of ignorance and a desire to destroy this nation. I mean, I'm sorry, but there's no other way to view it. Now, does he believe that? No. But he's got the mindset of a Kenyan, of an Islamic Kenyan. And that's where he finds fault with America. This racism and sexism garbage, it's got to stop. Sexism is a real thing. It's positive. Women are women and men are men. What do men love women for? Their femininity. Women are made by God, their entire body. All they've got to do is look at themselves in the mirror and they might figure out that they are designed for the purpose of reproducing it. And you know, there's aspects of men that go along with that as well. But that's what they're for. That's their primary goal in life. That's where they actually get fulfillment. I realize some women can't have children, and I know in some cases that's very difficult for them. I've had friends that have struggled through that. But this, you know, this stuff where they take these fertile minds coming out of high school and they feed these kids these absolute lies. They give them A's based on their compliance to these deceptive theories. And then if anybody exercises free thought, they're flunked, they're ostracized by the crowd. This is the new way. It's consensus thinking. It's Saul Alinsky. It's, you know, polarize and personalize and ridicule. In other words, make the person stand on their own two feet with no one to protect them and then just totally pulverize them. Break them down, tear them up, make an example out of them, and make it so hard on them that they'll never do it again. And when it comes to people with a little bit more money or clout, corporations, etc., then it's lawsuits. It's big, dirty lawsuits. Well, our system has gotten where lawsuits go on and on. They, you know, they're extraordinarily expensive. They last for years, and attorneys are the only ones that benefit financially. The banksters, as they're so commonly known, the big shot banks, the banksters that destroyed our global economy were almost all rewarded with such huge bonuses and financial, you know, they received such financial grace instead of thrown in jail. So they remained at large to wreck things again. And even now they're enticed to do it again, to strike again, because it all worked out so well the first time. The problem is we do not know where and at what time this corruption is going to cause the next failure. But what we do know is that frauds end suddenly, corruption always fails. We know it's coming. And if you don't think that's still going on, you don't know what's going on. There are so many games with derivatives and leveraging and stock options and stock persuasions and, you know, short selling and long selling. And they're doing the same on the metals. It's absolutely deceptive. There is no free market. When the left fights against Wall Street and criticizes those for being close to Wall Street, they're not really trying to solve the problem. They're just appealing to the misinformation of the masses, to the sheep. But the truth is, these same guys are in the driver's seat getting terribly rich. Even the Fed, you know, they want economic collapse. They want hyperinflationary expansion, because that's followed by another bailout, and so they get to start over and make more money. When we bailed out the banks the last time, it created a moral hazard that many people warned about at the time. So as a result, one thing we don't know is that the bailed out banks continued the derivative investments that caused the failures in the first place. In other words, nothing changed. They just got smarter. They've actually increased their involvement in this area of investment, which I would call perilous and poorly understood. People don't understand derivatives. They do it now to such new heights that the number of derivatives in 2009 looks like a large city from Earth orbiting altitude, a mere spot compared to all that can be seen now. In other words, if you looked at all the derivatives then, it's like a city compared to the globe. I mean, it's so out of control now, you can't even believe it. Goldman Sachs, who seems to be behind all this, which they truly are, they call them government Sachs. They're the most evil of all the companies that help cause the global economic collapse. And, you know, Hank Paulson was a prior CEO of Goldman Sachs and Ben Bernanke. And these two demanded a bailout for the mortgages. Once the bailout was approved, they said it's too late to help the mortgages. They took that money, did whatever they wanted with it, trillions of dollars, gave it to all their buddies, made everybody filthy rich, including themselves. After that, they gave Goldman Sachs so much money that after that, Goldman Sachs posted record returns year after year, quarter after quarter. Hank Paulson's stock went from something like a few hundred million to over $1 billion in like a year or two. That's what he did for himself. The bailout, the stimulus package, folks, was in the $4 trillion range or whatever it was. The total outstanding mortgage debt at the time was $2.5 trillion. Now we've got consumer debt at $4.1 trillion. I mean, we are stretched, and we've got all these smoke and mirrors games going on. The left play games. Obama's been in the office. Trump briefly, graciously mentioned, he said, "I inherited quite a mess." You had someone sitting in that office doing nothing, just peddling deception. Someone who worked there, a gal I was reading about, said that they would just spend their whole days creating stories to counteract truthful stories. They would just create spin all day. They really weren't accomplishing a lot. They were just constantly trying to improve their perception among the people. They were PR marketing specialists. That's who was running our White House. He knows how to go out and speak and schmooze you up. He's like the CEO of Apple. He knows how to get you caught up in what a cool guy he is, and he knows how to get you rallied up. The problem is the youth of this nation who are not focusing on the facts. Do I have a job? How much do I make? Do I have a house? How nice is it? How easy is it to get? How's life going right now? Those kids that aren't thinking that way, and by kids I mean 30s on down, they suck right in because it's cool. It's not pragmatic at all. Now we have a pragmatic president. But the system wants to destroy that. So here's where I was going. Goldman Sachs is by far the most destructive company that helped cause the global economic collapse. They now have three high-level positions in the Trump administration versus only one they had in Obama administration. Goldman Sachs effectually now oversees our entire U.S. financial system, the Fed, the National Economic Council, and the Treasury. That's a problem. Especially, even Obama used Goldman Sachs to reward his bundlers with these imitation-only investments. $1 million interest-free loan. 2 years later, you get a $4 million return on this invitation-only investment. The interest-free loan's paid off, and these people walked away with $4 million. That was the first round. Then he thought, well, heck on that. He did the Solyndra-style loans, interest-free for hundreds of millions of dollars, no collateral, no personal guarantees, no right to cure, nothing. Hundreds of millions of dollars, make your payment interest payments for 12 months. File bankruptcy, walk away richer than you ever were just for being my supporters. Scary. So they revoked the Glass-Steagall. Because of that, banks are still allowed to invest in risky assets like stocks. And the Federal Reserve has even talked about investing directly in stocks as its next recovery plan, even though the revoking of the Glass-Steagall played a major role in setting the U.S. up for the Great Recession. Trump plans to roll back Dodd-Frank, which was Glass-Steagall's half-hearted replacement. There's things in Dodd-Frank I don't agree with. But it does show that there will be no correction to the economic, I guess we'll call it, aberration for a long time. Because the Fed can print infinite amounts of money at its own discretion and give it to the banks, or even start investing it themselves directly, there's really no limit to how much the Fed and the Fed banks can manipulate the stock market. And that's what's going on. So long as they keep overall inflation, which doesn't count stocks or food, transportation, real estate, or energy costs and jobs under control, so for economic recovery, we're returning to the old tricks of banking deregulation to loosen up credit. And we've all seen how beautifully banks police themselves, as Alan Greenspan assured us they would. And I'm just reading what I've researched, and it's not that I totally... It's a tough situation, folks. It's not a good, healthy, free market. You know? We've got, the left criticizing trickle-down economics, whatever Obama's economics is, trickle-up, it's destroyed the middle class, absolutely diminished it. It has shifted wealth. Obama shifted more wealth to the top 1%, to where our market economy is now weaker because it's the well-off middle class is gone, and it's destroyed. This is the practice of the left, socialism. You've got to destroy the middle class. That's socialism. They make you think they're building it up. Our national debt, which you I don't know if you remember. I remember when it was 10 trillion and I thought it was ridiculous. That was it, you know, that was at the end of the Bush administration after Obama had gotten his 5 trillion hit or 4 trillion. Now we're at 20 trillion thanks to the Obama administration. And I'm running out of time, but Trump's infrastructure stimulus plan, he's looking to spend unbelievable amounts of money, unbelievable amounts of money. Corporate debts at stratospheric levels. Our stock market, which is severely a bubble, is ballooning in speculation of Trump's grand credit card. Not because earnings have improved. Nothing. Housing prices are going up to the same levels they reached in 07 in most of the U.S. because rates have been easy. Credit got easy again. Banks have continued to adjust or to issue adjustable rate mortgages. Home values have started declining in several key markets again, particularly at the high end, meaning some of those adjustable rate mortgages are going to be bombs that are going to, you know, they're getting near the end. Interest on all of our debt is at, it's still at historically low rates, but as it begins to rise, the Fed is promising interest rate rises starting this month. It's going to be destructive. I think that they're trying to hurt Trump's plans. And so bottom line is big rate increases are coming. So to keep it simple, folks, you got to obey biblical financial precepts and you just got to build hard asset portfolios, gold and silver based assets. We help you build portfolios. We do 401ks and IRAs. Folks, do not please stay caught up in the paper bubble. It's nuts. Inflation is hyperactive. You want to own long-term. You want to buy while the buy-in's good. You want to do it while it can be done sanely. I'm sure some of you are out there and you've bought when the markets are shooting all over the place. You don't want to do that. Coins plus 444-0044. Toll free 877-TAP-COIN or through our website at coinsplus.com. Be wise financially. Give us a call. We'd be happy to help you out. Thanks again for tuning in. Take care. God bless. And we'll be back Wednesday. Bye-bye.